Good morning, everyone. We're learning Shmuel Beis. We're starting a new parak. We're up to parak Chaf Aleph, the 21st chapter. Okay. So, you'll notice this relatively lengthy chapter, which mostly is a lot of pages because there's a lot of commentary on it. We can start off by looking at the English, which tells us on page 347 that the last four chapters of this Sefer, which we're now in the up to the last four chapters, it ends on Chaf Dalid, so 21-24. Yep, so the last four chapters of this book recount several events during David's reign, many of which caused him considerable anguish. These events are not presented in chronological order. Rather, as will be noted in the course of the commentary, they're grouped according to the subject they discuss. For example, this chapter begins with a long drought, since it follows the report that David's personal coin was Ira. Skipping the parentheses, the sages comment that the nation's prosperity is negatively affected by a failure to distribute priestly gifts fairly to more than one Kohen. And then I put in print and underline, if someone gives exclusively to only one, thus depriving others of their livelihood, it is fitting that he should be deprived of his own livelihood. So the point of this paragraph is that what we're now going to be seeing is not necessarily in the order of that which has been happening chronologically in the previous chapters. So let's begin to talk about this famine. Pasuk Aleph, Vayehi Rav Bimei David. So there was a famine, and it was in the days of David, which seems to be pretty obvious. As we're going to see, this whole discussion is going to be with David and what David's going to do to somehow cause this famine to end. So obviously that's something worthwhile thinking about. Why it says Bimei David, we'll get back to that soon. How long was this famine? Shol Shon was for 3 years. And it wasn't just a year that the economy, like the market's going up and down like a yo-yo. No, it was Shon Achrei Shana. It was consecutive. It was three full solid years, one after the other. V'yavakesh David es p'nei Hashem. So, after 3 years, maybe David shouldn't have waited for 3 years. We're going to see that in the Radak, why he waited so long. But nonetheless, after 3 years, he turned to Hashem. What does it mean he turns to God? So the Mesudas David says, V'yavakesh David shol b'urim. He went to the Urim v'Tumim, to the high priest, and asked the question, and the lights of the Urim v'Tumim gave him an answer as to the reason why there was a famine. But Yomar Hashem, let's conclude this pasuk. So Hashem said, the reason why there's a famine for 3 years is because of three things. And we're going to see what exactly were these three things in a moment in the commentary. One of them is El Sha'ol, something about Sha'ol, which you would think that means that they did something, that Sha'ol was a bad guy, he was a bad king, so now we're punishing, which obviously is difficult, so why would they be punished now? This is many years later. This should have been punished in the days of Shaul.
It looks like it says, "Vayomer Hashem el Shaul." Like Hashem is talking to Shaul.
Right. The only problem is Shaul is.
It's been gone for a while. But it's not chronological order.
Correct. That's true. Maybe that's why it also mentions it was in the days of David. But Shaul certainly is not alive. The El Beis. So you're right. That's one way to read it. But you can see that. Hashem is not speaking also Ve'el Beis Hadamim to the house of blood. So he's talking about this. These are the reasons why there was a famine for 3 years. Because of something which happened with Shaul, which we'll see what that was. Another reason is on account of Beis Hadamim, the house of bloods. We'll see what that means. And Al Asher Hamas Es HaGivonim. Because the Givonim were killed. So obviously there's quite a few things that we can be speaking about to understand what these psukim are discussing. So there's three things that were done wrong, and therefore appropriately that a punishment for each of them for each of those years. That apparently one each year of famine corresponds equally, which is assuming that all these crimes, whatever they were, which we'll see in a moment, were equal. So then each year corresponds to each different punishment. Because certainly Hashem does not give us a punishment and then punish us again for the same crime, which is also in legal terms called
double jeopardy.
Not the Alex Trebek one. Right. Anyway, so let's look at, let's start off with...
And why did it wait till now to give that punishment?
Right. So there's a lot of questions over here. There certainly are a lot of questions. So let's begin by looking at Rashi, which is again on page 348. Okay. Yeah. So on page 348, we have the words of Rashi. What were the things that were done wrong, or maybe not going in the correct order over here, but nonetheless, let's figure out what are these three things. El Shaul. Again, just a simple reading would think, well, Shaul was a bad guy, so Shaul did something wrong, so he deserves to be punished. Then why were they being punished now? Shaul should have been punished. Okay? So what Rashi says, it had nothing to do with what Shaul did, it's what we did wrong regarding Shaul. Says Rashi, Al-Avon Shaul, the sin regarding Shaul, Shenikvar Pitom, that he was buried quickly and not in a public manner. Sheganvuhu anshi yavish gilad bikavruhu. That what we read about many, many weeks ago, that a group of people from yavish gilad, they took heroic efforts to take back the remains of Shaul, who were was in the hands of the Plishtim, and buried him. But it was done, they did it quickly, otherwise their own lives would have been in jeopardy. But once their remains were in their hands, a more appropriate burial should have taken place. And that's what Rashi concludes, V'nispad l'fi kvodo, that he was not eulogized in accordance to his honor. So therefore, that at least explains now why David's generation is being punished, because it was David's generation that made the mistake in not showing the proper respect to his predecessor, to Shaul, in a proper burial and a proper eulogy. So that's how Rashi interprets the words El Shaul.
Aren't you supposed to bury the dead immediately after death?
Sure, but that doesn't... But there's a, you can
so
do it...
Can it get far
he died
before
he has to be... They didn't expect him to be dead, so where is the...
I mean, he was already...
The respect for them to take him and salvage him and bury him.
I think the idea is that they could have... Pitom, there's nothing wrong with doing it quickly. The problem is that they really... It was privately. It was hidden. They didn't talk about it. They just did it without saying anything. Not that they couldn't have, even if they would have not even necessarily have waited an extra second, but while they were already in the process of doing it, they could have publicized it more, causing more people to have been able
Did
to attend.
The war?
What?
Wasn't the war lost?
Yes.
So
and Shaul was by the Plishtim, and they were able to sneak into the whatever and to take Shaul.
I thought the idea was for
apparently, even if that would be the case, perhaps he still could have been eulogized better than he was. Right? It's interesting. It talks specifically about the Hespit, so the eulogy. So certainly those people could have buried him immediately and quickly, but they could have at least done a little bit more than they did. Okay, it wasn't done lefi kvodo. Wasn't right. So that's reason number one, that they're involved in a famine. This is what the pasuk says. It says El Shaul. Okay, so that's how Rashi interprets it. Again, because if you were to look at it the other way, that it's because Shaul allowed Agag, for example, among Amalek to live, so then Shaul should have been punished, not this generation. Okay, let's continue with Rashi. The El Beis Hadamim. Some other thing that went wrong regarding the blood that was spilled. What happened? David's killed more than one person in his life. So Rashi says, Shaharag Nov Ir HaKohanim, there was a group of Kohanim, an entire city, which was named Nob, and very great, great Kohanim were found there. And those Kohanim were killed. And for that reason, we have a famine in the days of David that they're not able to eat because of this terrible thing that was done. Of course, Doeg did it. Doeg killed Noah Yara Kohanim. Why? Because Shaul thought that they were hiding David and gave him a sword, he gave him some bread and food, right? Provisions, whatnot. So this certainly is a question, which we're going to address, is that David didn't do anything wrong, right? And David didn't kill. It was Doeg that was instructed by Shaul to wipe out this nation, this city of Kohanim. So it's Shaul's fault, not David's fault. So why, in the days of David, is there a famine? Okay, so that question remains, not for the first reason, because of Shaul, that was David's mistake, or David's generation's mistake. But this is not David's generation's mistake. It was Shaul's mistake by giving the orders to kill innocent Kohan. Continuing with the next Rashi, which is now on the next page, 350, Elisha Hema says HaGivonim. Okay, now we're going to obviously understand who the Givonim are, and also it says that these poor Givonim were killed. So on page 350, Rashi says that what happened over here, Kishaharag Novir HaKohanim, that when the people Nov, these Kohanim, were killed, apparently there were other people by the name nation of Givonim that lived also with these Kohanim in Nob. So as blood was being spilled, so they didn't really distinguish between the Kohanim and the Givonim. Hamas Mehem Shiva. Seven people from the Givonim were killed. And if you want to know the breakup of who these seven people are, Rashi tells us, Shnei Chaytveitz, two of them were woodchoppers. Shnei Shevi Mayim, two of them were water drawers. V'shamas v'chaz and v'saifer. And he had three other guys. One was a shamas, right? He did whatever services was done. One was a nice chazan, right? Who'd ever want to kill a chazan? And a saifer and a scribe. Kach meforish v'gemur yishamas v'sanhedrin.
It's very strange to have this mentioned like that. And when you have a fighting, a war, obviously innocent people are killed.
Right. So that's a good point. It's true. And why specifically seven? Perhaps one explanation to that we'll see when we actually have David has a conversation with the Givonim, and a very cruel thing that they ask in return, which is going to end up being, I want seven people killed from among the Jewish people, even though it's many generations later. So that's how some people interpret it. Must have been seven. They wanted an even exchange. You killed seven of ours, we want seven of yours killed. That's one interpretation. Continues Rashi, Ramosenu Amru, that our rabbis teach us, Mitoch Shaharag Es HaKohanim Shayu Maspikin Lehen Mazoin Ha'el Allah HaKosuv K'ilu HaMisu. Very interesting. That our sages teach us that really they were not killed. That when it came to Doeg, he was a very very good killer. And when he killed, he only killed the Kohanim of Nob and no one else. However, the problem was that the Givonim were not very wealthy. And the only way that they were able to be supported, the only way they were able to survive is by those Kohanim from Nob and their generosity. And therefore, since the people from Nob, the Kohanim, were killed, the Givonim no longer had food. So what happens if they no longer have food? They're going to die. Which, obviously, that you can already see the connection is very clear of famine, why this particular punishment. So the fact that the Givonim lost out and they were not able to eat as they were able to earlier, so too, when it comes to the punishment, that the Jewish people also will have to feel that pain, will have to feel that suffering and that hunger of the Givonim. It says that it's not necessarily pulling a trigger is the only time when a person is considered to have violated, having hurt or killed a person. But even the situation where you put them in a place where it's impossible for them to function by taking away their resources, taking away their sustenance, so then they're going to starve on their own. That's also considered as though they were killed, because that's what the pasuk says. The pasuk says, "Asher hemis es ha-givonim." And we don't find anywhere that the givonim were killed until this mentioning. So therefore, perhaps they were not actually killed, but the fact that the kohanim were killed, it's as though you killed the givonim as well. How cautious and careful we have to be when it comes to helping another person. And by a person who may become dependent, which could be another issue of enabling another person by giving them continuously, but then retracting and taking that away from that individual, it's a very big problem. So anyway, these are the three things, and connected to those three things are the three punishments. Certainly we have to understand as to why David's generation deserves this punishment for the last two. The first, I can understand. They didn't eulogize Shaul properly, okay? But when it came to Nov, those Kohanim were killed, not by David, but by Shaul. And this third thing is basically just a reaction to that issue. Either it was the same thing, that more people died, the Givonim, which was not by David, but by Shaul, or that because Shaul gave those orders for Nov, those Kohanim to be killed, so these Givonim had no food. Why is David's generation being punished? That's the question that one could certainly ask. And if you look in the English over here, on the bottom of page 350, it says, since both sins, the second and the third, the failure, not necessarily, let me read this. Since both sins, the failure to mourn Shaul properly and his treatment of the Givonim were committed decades earlier, why did God delay punishment for 30 years or more? So, again, assuming that's the whole issue of if this is in fact the case, if it's written chronologically, but nonetheless, assuming that it was 30 years later, the Medrash explains that God knew that Shaul's generation was too weak to endure an extended food shortage. While in David's time, the people's health and economic situation were more sturdy. So God waited until a time in which the Jewish people had more of the ability to be able to physically survive without food than the generation of Shaul, where apparently was not as great. So that kind of also addresses the other question, so why is David's generation being punished when they're not the ones that did anything wrong? And perhaps it's coming to teach us this message that if Hashem would have punished that weaker generation, perhaps even a weaker spiritual generation, then they would not have been able to have handled that type of a punishment. But as Kol Yisrael, Reuven, Zebizah, were all connected to one another, so Hashem had to wait until a generation which greater people, maybe bigger tzaddikim, who were able to withstand such a tremendous nisayon in such a difficult situation. Me'am Lois actually compares it to shelves. If you buy some glass and you want to build and you want to sell your wares and you put them on your shelves, the first thing you want to do is make sure that the shelves are sturdy enough to be able to hold those pieces of glass. So if the shelves are too weak, then you can't put them there. So you have to test the shelves. If they're strong enough and sturdy enough, then and only then are you able to put them there. And to be a little bit beyond the way I should ever speak, but this is how some people can rationalize something which is impossible to rationalize, to explain, which is the Shoah, the Holocaust. And in the times of the Shoah, you cannot possibly understand that the people in that generation deserved what happened. It would be preposterous for anyone to make such a crazy statement. Perhaps, this is the same idea, that it's the opposite, that the people in that generation were on such a high level, such a high madrega, that somehow Hashem understood that for whatever reason that this had to happen, and it happened for whatever reason we don't understand, but Hashem waited for that generation, for this travesty, this terrible thing to occur, this terrible thing. It would have happened in a generation later, or a generation earlier, in which maybe the strength that people had, that inner strength, that we see the inner strength, you see the people that the survivors and how they're able to somehow have that ability. So perhaps that's the same idea as why Hashem waited when it came to the generation of David, where there were stronger generations spiritually to be able to withstand such challenges and nisyonos and tests. Perhaps that's one way to address that question, which certainly I don't know any other logical answers to that, assuming that that's any more logical.
What they're saying is that they were chosen. That particular generation
was chosen.
Perhaps. I mean, being pushed into a corner to come up with something which makes any sense, I still say it with very uncomfortably. But that's
same thing with the going back to Chmelnytsky. Also, look what happened after Chmelnytsky. They survived.
Right.
Hasidus started. And
right.
It's a whole new
generation. Right. So, certainly I cannot understand why things happen, but perhaps to make that connection, if I could make that connection, and that will explain why our parak began, Vehi Rav Yimei David, why it says that the famine happened in the days of David. We know, we're going to see, the whole story is going to be David speaking to the Gavonim and asking them, what can I do to make things right? So we knew it was, of course, in the days of David. Perhaps what the Pasuk is teaching us is, as we've just said, that the famine was in the days of David, that even though it shouldn't have been in the days of David, even though David's generation didn't necessarily deserve on their own rights, but nonetheless Hashem had to have, for whatever reason, this famine, and he felt that it would be better than it should happen b'yemei David. We now turn to page 348. Let's look in the words of the Radak. The Radak addresses other questions. Okay? All right. The very top of page 348 in the middle column is a very long redact. Don't worry, we're not going to see the whole thing, all right? Otherwise, you'll be late for dinner. Yesh li shol. You can ask the question, mitnimal lo bikish ad hashana hashlishis. What was David waiting for? He had to wait till the third year to ask for the Urim V'Tumim? If I'm hungry for 2 days, I'm already getting worried, 3 years? What's David doing? So this is how the Radak addresses this question. Perish Rabbeinu Sadya Gaon Zal. So the Sadya Gaon explains, perhaps this is what was going on. Shanri Shonam Chashav Mikrahu Kederach Olam. The first year,
natural.
What did David think? Yeah, sometimes you have a good bumper crop, sometimes things are not going so well, a blight, whatever it may be. All right, so the first year is a famine. All right, unfortunately, sometimes it happens. Shnei the second year, Chashav, what did he think? Ki ba'avon pesel micha hoya. Ve'er kol ma shimotza. Perhaps it's because of the sin of Avodah Zarah. Perhaps there are those people who worship idols in our midst, and that's the reason why these things are happening.
And that happened way before. That happened in the time of the Shoftim.
Right, yeah, that's true also. Maybe it's brought down like maybe 10 lines down, which I didn't underline, that perhaps it doesn't necessarily mean that it could have been then, but it could have also been that there's still remnants and traces within private in people's homes, how they're still engaged and practiced in this type of worship. Kishaya Rav Mishana, so it doesn't just mean he was contemplating and thinking about it. 10 lines later, which we're not going to see, it says that he actually did some investigations, right? He actually had scouts and spies knocking on doors, since 2010, bugging you, finding out whether or not you are an Ovid of Odazar, if you worship idols. And that didn't happen. So, Kishai Rav B'Shana Shlishis, David was making sure that there was no people that were idol worshippers in his midst. Because if there were, then he would at least... It justifies the reasons why there's a famine. Kishahaya Rav B'Shana Shlishis, when there's a famine, again, a third year, Yodah Ki Avon Acher Haya Uvikeshes Pnei Hashem L'das Mazeh. At that point, he realized it wasn't the Avodah Zarah business, and in fact, it's not brought down over here, but the Mamloy says another thing. It says that perhaps there are people that made pledges publicly and did not redeem their pledges. That's what it says. Maybe they're Oyvod Avodah Zarah, and it says that's another thing. But it's not brought down over here. The way that the Radak says it, quoting the Rabbeinu Sadya Gaon, is in the third year, he he threw his hands up in the air and said, I don't get it. I have no idea. So the first year, okay, it happens. The second year, perhaps there was this, we were making some type of mistakes, we did some sin. And then afterwards, we can't figure it out. None of this makes any sense. And therefore, for that reason, he went to the Urim V'Tumim to ask exactly why things are happening as they are. So, as we mentioned, when it came to the one of the three reasons is because of something which happened with the Givonim. And it's worthwhile just spending a moment discussing who were the Givonim, which is actually brought down in the English on page 349, which I did underline, which says two reasons for the famine. The Givonites were part of the Amorites, which is one of the seven Canaanite inhabitants of Eretz Israel. When it comes to the seven nations of Israel, there are very strict laws when it comes to those seven people, those seven nations. So, and they knew that. So it says in the English, rather than make peace with Yeshua, leave the country or fight and be killed, which was always, fight and be killed, as we saw in the previous chapters, always the last resort. We always ask, let's make peace or leave. So what did the Givonim do? They disguised themselves as people from far off land who had come to convert to Judaism. Believing them, Yeshua and the Bnei Israel showed them great hospitality and swore to accept and to protect them. Since the oath had been obtained under false pretenses, it was legally not valid. And he continues that, but nonetheless, since they did make that promise, they didn't throw them away, but rather Yeshua made them as wood choppers and water jars for the tabernacle for the Mishkan.
Chazanim and Sofer?
Well, I mean, that's...
I'm not getting that one.
That's a step below.
And Shamash.
That's a step below being a wood chopper and a water carrier. I don't know, that's a good question. It's also a question what an entire nation is carrying water. It's also like... It means they gave them medial tasks to do.
No, but I still don't get the shamash and the chazanim.
Well, yeah, well, I mean, okay.
That's the problem.
Okay, I can't disagree with that. But nonetheless, that's what it says in the Yerushalmi. But the point is that these are the Givonim. The Givonim were not good people. They were people that tricked, and this, of course, is brought down at length in Sefer Yehoshua, in the book of Joshua, that he was not going to ever convert those people from the seven nations. That's not agreed upon. They could have left when Yeshua and the Jewish people crossed the Jordan to go into the land of Canaan, but they pretended that they were, you know, they had ripped clothes, tattered, as though they were coming from a far distance, right? And because of this, these are the Givonim. Obviously, they are second-class citizens, but it's not that we were not nice. We treated them very well because we could have done a lot worse to them. So we gave them tasks to do to help us, but nonetheless, obviously they were not very affluent. They didn't have a lot of things. With that said, we now understand why many of them live in Nov. Why do they live in Nov? They took care of the the Kohanim, whatever, but they did it because they had no food. They were not taken care of very well, so therefore they had to beg for food to be able to survive. And once Nov's Kohanim, those who provided food and sustenance to these people, were killed, ultimately and indirectly, according to that interpretation, they also would die. So that's how we can understand
were
some of these words. What? They're considered to be converts, but they're not considered to be on the same level.
But that's no way to treat a convert.
Oh, exactly. That we're going to actually...
It's a big chet.
Correct. But it was not... They were not really...
They really didn't convert.
They didn't convert properly because it was under false pretenses.
No,
but they didn't really convert.
Correct. There's certain sensitivity, but I think that was the sensitivity that Yeshua did, that he allowed them to remain. Right?
Yes, but
so that was sensitive.
But to let them not to have them hungry.
Correct.
The lack of sensitivity.
Clearly, Hashem punishing the Jewish people shows us
that they have let the right thing. Is enough. It says enough.
And perhaps, even though it's not brought down over here, that being sensitive to that, knowing that Noah Kohanim was wiped out, and that there's these people, what did we do to step up? to be able to help those people that are now lacking.
It's Pesach.
So that's right. So that's right, bringing them in. Right. So that could also make it our fault. I'm saying it's not. It wasn't just Doeg who was killing these Kohanim. It was what did we do in reaction to this to help these people? Okay, let's continue. Pasuk Beis. So Vayikra Hamelach Givonim. So it mentions this
what
is David.
What are the other things that Bardak is saying on this whole? What is he?
Well, he.
They have to do with Yotam.
He's. It's.
Yotam, cool. Anushiva, Anushim. That's a different concept, I think.
This huge, huge Radak. There are other things that he talks about. A couple of the things, like I underlined something, but it's. Rashi is also going to say it in Pasuk, in the next Pasuk, so it's going to explain a little bit better. It discusses the punishment exactly a little bit more as to why this happened, okay, and why the question of how could we punish someone else for the sins of our fathers, right? Why should they be held accountable?
So don't we learn that Hashem sometimes waits generations upon generations to punish? I mean, that's like one of the tenets of
This is one of the things that's brought down over here. It's, I mean, you could probably spend 3 hours reading this Radak, which we're not going to. But it's worthwhile. I'm not saying not to do it. It's there, and it's good stuff. Okay, Pasuk Beis. I just pick out the stuff which I find the juiciest. Pasuk Beis. Vayikra HaMelech LaGivonim. So now David, now we have a little understanding. David has a good understanding why this is happening to the Jewish people. So he goes to the Givonim. He realizes that if there's an issue, you can't beat around the bush. You have to go straight to the source. So the Givonim were the ones that are harmed. You can't go to Novi or HaKohanim. They're dead. There's nothing we can do about that, right? I guess he could do something about Shaul and do something. I mean, he's already been buried. What can you do about that? Maybe you can something, which we're actually going to see. He is going to do something later on in this parak. But certainly the easiest thing he can do is to approach the living, the Givonim. The Yomar Lehem, so what does David do? He comes up to them, and he speaks to them. And then, as you can see in the English, it's in parentheses, V'hagivonim lo mibnei Yisrael heima. Right, this was kind of your question. The Givonim are not really considered to be part of the Jewish people. They don't, certainly don't have the attributes that a Jewish person is supposed to show. Ki'imi yeser ho'emori. Rather, they're considered to be from the Amorites, which is one of the seven nations of Canaan. Bnei Israel nishmu lahem, and the Jewish people, they made a certain promise to them. Yavach yishol v'hakoysam v'kanoso l'bnei Israel v'yehuda. And when it came to Shaul, he didn't really care too much about him. He wanted to smite them v'kanoso rash. Mesuda Sion says is in kas, out of anger, the Bnei Israel and Yehuda. So Shaul wanted to kill them. Now, the reason, well, it doesn't necessarily mean that he wanted to kill him, but as we said, maybe what his intention was he knew that they would starve to death, and therefore, by killing Novi or Kohanim, he didn't want them to be helped, because Shaul felt that the people, these Givonim, should not have done what they did. They lied to us, they tricked us, and therefore, that's the reason why he didn't sustain them. Now, focusing on why do we need to know this little sidebar to the point that it has to be in English as parentheses. Why do we need to know that the Givonim were not among the Jewish people? So on this, Rashi, which is also the Radak in the previous Pasuk, but let's look in Rashi in Pasuk Beis, he says the following. But Yomar Lehem, Divrei Ritzoi Shi'avor Al Midoseihem V'Yimchu Lishol. So he spoke to them in a very kind and sweet way that those people from the Givonim should somehow undo their feelings of anger toward the way that we treated them and that they should forgive Shaul and his household. So this is what David did. He was hoping that they should be forgiven. Obviously, not just that they should be forgiven, but hopeful. This way, no more famine. We'll be able to eat again. So this is the Rashi which I want to focus on. V'agivonim lo b'nei Yisrael hima. I can tell you that they were not from the B'nai Israel. This is a little bit scary. This is a general rule that is nothing which we probably haven't heard before, but it's always worth repeating. Kolomar, v'hein haroi v'atzim midas hafzarius. When it came to these people, their attribute was not that of compassion and kindness, but is midas hafzarius, cruelty. They were very cruel people. How do we know that they're cruel? Because we're going to see, assuming this was 30 years later, it didn't make a difference. They still were angry. They still were upset at what we did to them. And we're going to see that they were unwilling to forgive the Jewish people. And it wasn't even Shaul coming. It was David. Someone, I didn't do anything. And I'm asking forgiveness for someone else. And yet they were unable to let go of that anger. And therefore, says Rashi, Shein Mizar Shaul Abraham Avinu. Someone who has such an attribute of cruelty cannot possibly have the same DNA as Avraham Avinu. Why? Then ruin Lidbuk B'Yisrael. They're not someone who has the capacity to attach themselves to the Jewish people. This is why they could not enter into Klal Yisrael. Why? Because there are three requirements that if you look at every single Jew, hopefully, they all have these three things. Shloisha Samanim Yesh Ba'umazu. What are the three things that set the Jewish people apart from the rest of the world? Rachmanim, Baishanim, Goyim Lechasad.
Well, a lot of Jews don't
have that, so. Rachmanim, let's just translate these words. Rachmanim is a compassionate.
Baishanim, I don't know.
Baishanim, what is it? Baishanim is someone who is.
Humility.
Humility. Right, and goyim lechasadim, kind. Mi sheyesh bo shloisha samanim halalu roy lidbak boy. It doesn't mean necessarily that if a Jew nebuch, you know, no one's perfect. Not everyone does all the mitzvos either, right? But when it comes to a Jew, this is what we're looking for. That is the goal of a Jew, is to refine these three things in our lives. And when it comes to not a Jew by birth, but a Jew by choice, right? We want those individuals to have the capacity to somehow get to that level. Otherwise, we're setting them up to fail.
Isn't it very interesting that Amalek doesn't kill?
What, they don't kill?
Shaul.
Oh, Shaul didn't kill.
Right. Let's take care of the Gibeonim.
Right. Misplaced hatred, misplaced. Correct.
And
he had brought him too much
to
compassion.
To forgive the Germans, they're going to find the Rachamim for the Chesed.
I understand. It doesn't. It also Rachmanim and Gomel Chesedim. Being a Gomel Chesed doesn't mean you should just be crazy and throw your money around and give it to people. If someone who's addicted to crack cocaine, so you give it to him, so you know he's going
to
run off and buy it. That's not a goyim al chesed. That's enabling someone.
To Israel, to Hamas, and so on.
Whatever it is, you know,
yes.
Every situation
so
is
it's
unique.
Very
correct. That's the reason why I wanted to. It's interesting. It doesn't say it. The last words of Rashi is roy lidbak boy. Only someone who has these three things within them have the ability to connect to the Jewish people, because otherwise. The whole idea of when a person converts, what you're trying to do is you want to say, I want to disassociate myself from a certain way of living, and I want to connect myself to you. But if we're so far apart, right, that we have such different attributes, there's no way we'll ever be able to really come together. And therefore, it's not something in which is within the Givonim's ability to really convert, because they won't be able to fit in, because that's not who they are. So therefore, they were not considered to ever be among the B'nai Israel. So why does Rashi point this out, this unimportant detail, seemingly unimportant detail, so much that it's in parentheses in the English, is because this is a segue to what we're going to see of their cruelty. the cruelty of not being able to forgive, not being able to show kindness and compassion. So therefore, with that pasuk, we're now going to know why they react in such a harsh way to David's pleading and begging for forgiveness, for not for him, for past generation. Okay, let's see the pasuk again. Okay, pasuk again. Vayomer David el hagivoyim. So again, David is speaking to the Gibonim. He says, "Ma asalachem? What can we do? Ma chaper? What can we do for some kapara, some forgiveness? Uvarchu es nachlas Hashem. Right? That we should be able, that you should be able to bless the nachla of Hashem, the heritage of Hashem. You should not look upon us in a the way that you have in a blessing. You should look at us. V'yarmel ha-givonim. So the Gibonim said, Ein li." In Lanu Kesev Zahav, so it's not to me, to them, silver and gold, Im Shaul, and as we have no desire to take silver and gold. So it's interesting, one way it says singular, one is us, right? What exactly does that mean? We'll see that in Rashi in a moment. V'im Beis, the Ein Lanu Ish Lahamas V'Yisrael. And we have no, it's interesting in English, they throw in the word innocent man in Israel to put to death, which means that they considered everyone guilty among the Jewish people, and that they all should be killed. But Yomer, so he said, whatever you say, we'll do. Whatever you want to do, we'll do. And why is David throwing himself out there, handing them a blank check, right? What is he doing? Because he sees we're starving to death. This is not a joke.
Make amends to get rid of this.
And he knows that he has to do it. This is the Urim and Thummim pointed out. This is our mistake. So he has to do whatever it entails, as hard as it may be. So let's just see this next pasuk. V'yomer el ha-melech. So they said to the king. It's interesting when they're constantly. He doesn't ever say he's speaking to David, because apparently they didn't distinguish between David and Shaul. You're the king. You're the leader. And the leader made a mistake. And we're holding you as accountable as the previous generation. V'yomer el ha-melech, ha-ish asher kilonu. This guy, who happened to be Shaul, who wanted to wipe us out. V'asher dimolonu. Mesudas Sion says, chasha, that he had this thought process of just destroying us. Nishmanu m'hisyasi b'chol gul Yisrael. That he wanted to remove us from all the boundaries and borders of Israel. Let's actually say one more pasuk. Yutan lanu shiva anashim mibanav. I want 7 of his kids. And do you know why? Not so we can play checkers together. I'll tell you what I'm going to do with these 7 people. Vokanum l'Hashem b'giva sha'ol b'chir Hashem. Says Mesudas Sion is an Inyan Tliya. Or Rashi says, and we're going to hang them in front of God. In give us Shaul, Bachir Hashem, you chosen ones of Hashem. V'yomer Hamelch ani atein, and the king says, no problem, take them, have fun, kill them.
Who's saying to take
the? The people from the Gavonim are saying, we want 7 of your God, of Shaul's.
Blood.
Right, they wanted right. Shaul's descendants. And David's like,
to make up for the sin okay. That died, I guess.
David's like, okay, no problem, fine. Not no problem, fine. So, right, so that's, as I mentioned before, perhaps that's the 7th of the 7. Some also explain maybe it was 7 because those were the only people that was left, right? So it doesn't necessarily mean that 7 were killed among the Givonim, but, and that's why they want 7 back as an even trade. Maybe the idea is that those were the only people remaining among the house of Shaul. Of course, you also had Mephibosheth, in which a promise was made not to harm him by David. So we're going to see that David does spare him. We're not going to see that today. But let's go back to page 350 for a moment, and let's just see a couple of things over here. Pasuk Dalet. One of the things that we mentioned is how it says Li, it's written that way, but the way it's read is Lanu, right, with regard to money, singular or plural. So if you look in the in Rashi, on the second wide line on page 350, anyone who casts up as a hub, im shol, kim the bushings. We don't want any of your money, no problem, no money. We want your life, right? We don't want your money. We want you dead. Bikesh. So what does that mean? So it means like this. Bikesh l'faisam b'mamo. What David did behind the scenes was as follows. He didn't just say, here, whatever you want. He said, I'm a wealthy guy. Name your price. I know that we harmed you. What could I do to be able to for you to forgive me? Well, I'll give you whatever money you want. Says Rashi, full of ratsu. And they together didn't want. And then David thought to himself, yeah, it's because maybe peer pressure and this and that. So then, Omer Shemahim Misvayoshim Zeh Mizeh. So it's interesting. They don't have that attribute, right. But when it comes to money, that attribute of Busha they'll have. I'm not sure if that's what it means when it says the Jewish people are embarrassed or they have the humility. So they're embarrassed to accept bribes in public. So Holochafayas Kol Echad Echad L'Atzma. I'm not sure what that means. That David went to every single person, but he went to the leaders separately, had separate private meetings, right? And he said, you know what? Okay, I won't tell anyone. Here's $1 million. Okay? And he says it to all these other people. It's a secret. V'lo nispaisu. And he was unable to appease them. L'kach siv ein likas v'zahav loshen yachid. Zuri Yisiv Yerushalmi. So Yerushalmi explains that's the reason why it's written and read differently. That when it comes to...
Because it was both,
right. And if you want to have a little more fun with this, which I just thought about, the way it's actually read is lanu, right? When you read something, it's something which everyone hears. So right. When it came to everyone, so he spoke to everyone. But the single was quiet. It was red. No one heard it. So maybe that's possible. So anyway, thanks. So he asked them for bribes and whatnot, and they was unable to. They were uninterested in accepting any of these bribes, and therefore, what they wanted to do was to have them hung. Just to look on the English on page 351, where it says six. That the Givonim asked for seven descendants of Shaul, whom they would hang publicly. This would show the entire nation that harassment of the Givonites would not be tolerated. So it wasn't just a nice exchange one to the next, but it was a way to show that this is not something which should ever occur again, and therefore that's the reason why money wouldn't have sufficed.
The Givonites didn't say anything until David came to them.
Right.
In other words, they never made any claims.
Right, you're right. But hey, once you're asking for a hand, whatever the expression, a finger.
Give them a finger, exactly.
Right.
Just start off with these people.
That's it.
They want more and more. That's right. What's going on now?
So let me just conclude by reading this one last piece in the bottom of page 352, which is in English. Why did they choose the specific place in Givah Sho'ol? So it says the Givonim wanted the execution to be carried out near Sho'ol's home, in order to make a greater impression on those who saw it. Quotations, if this is what happens to a king, then how much more so is the punishment that awaits a commoner who commits such an injustice? So therefore, the reason why they chose that place specifically is so that more people should know of what happened and that it should never happen again in the future. Stop here.